Welcome back to 32 Fans in 32 Days. And today, Akiva, we have real football. The Patriots and Steelers are starting the 2015 season tonight. Are you excited?
I'd be more excited if it was the Jets playing, but I'm moderately excited.
Well, fine. You'll have to wait 3 more days for that. I think most of America is more interested in this game than the Jets game.
Pretty sure that the Jets-Browns is what everybody's waiting for.
Yeah, that'll be like the corner TV in the bar with Sunday Ticket. All right, but actually, let's focus on the topic at hand today. The topic at hand today is the Seattle Seahawks, who were 1 yard away from hosting tonight's game and from, you know, attempting to possibly become back-to-back-to-back Super Bowl champions. But alas, they are not. And so we have them ranked number 2 going into the season. You have them number 2 behind New England, which we did yesterday. I have them number 2 behind Green Bay, the team that they beat in that fantastic NFC Championship game. So you think that this is still the best team in the NFC?
I kind of do, but I also have seen a huge backlash against the Seahawks mounting in the last week or so. I'm not sure if you've seen that also.
No, tell me about this backlash.
I think a lot of it is predicated on the fact that they don't have Cam Chancellor in camp right now. They have a couple guys who aren't 100%. And people are just nervous about, you know, the secondary. And if they don't have that, you know, all-world secondary, then they're just another really good team.
It's funny. Did you see Robert Mays, his article last week, talking about, like, the best teams at each position in the league?
Yeah.
Well, you know where this is going, right?
Well, the Seahawks were the best.
No. So he has said best secondary. So for each position, he said
he had Minnesota,
was last year.
I think, as better than Seattle.
Yeah,
right?
It's not just that he had Minnesota better than Seattle, but he said Seattle was the best in 2014, 2013, 2012. Like, I mean, Seattle's had an absolute. Their secondary has just been on another level. And, you know, they lost, obviously, they lost Maxwell already. And as you said, now there's issues with Chancellor. Look, I would still rather have the Seattle secondary than the Vikings secondary, and it's not close. But, you know, he's trying to be a little provocative in that article. But the point is that, yeah, if they lose that position of strength, then sort of, you know, that's the trump card that they hold over every other team. But, you know, we'll get into those particulars when we bring our guest on. Is there anything else going on exciting in your life, Akiva?
No, I'm just super excited. This is the second to last one of these bad boys, and I'm super excited to almost be done.
Yeah, our wives are as well. Although we haven't yet told them about the new weekly podcast, right? We're going to be doing the guess the lines.
I think so. At least right. Until Bill Simmons and Cousin Sal come back. I have really carefully avoided all line talk and all. You know, I have not seen one line just in case we do the stupid podcast in the next. We have to do it soon because I got to make my picks against the spread for all my pools.
Yeah, it's very difficult to avoid. Actually, Bill Simmons today made a comment on Instagram and Twitter about himself and Cousin Sal, how they guessed the lines together today, but without a podcast, of course. And I clicked the picture not knowing what it was, and then as soon as I saw that it was an email between the two of them, I was looking on my phone, so it was very small, so I didn't see anything. Although I think you didn't look. Well, I didn't look, but I think that our Steelers fan made reference to the line in the Week 1 game, didn't he? Or somebody did.
I think we Although told someone, line, but I think we shut them up fast enough that I have no idea.
And the truth is
about.
that line, whatever it was then, would have changed by now because Tom Brady's playing in the game. So, but you know, we'll get to that all in good time. Let's talk about the Seattle Seahawks. And joining us today to talk about the Seahawks is your former roommate and a newly engaged man, Josh Grashin.
Hi guys, pleasure to be here.
Josh, congratulations on your impending nuptials.
Thank you very much.
Josh, talk about what it's like to live with me first.
Former roommate. Yeah.
That I don't think this is an R-rated podcast.
Yeah, I guess probably don't talk about it.
Yeah, you
why?
Don't want...
We've had F-bombs now in 3.
I know,
episodes.
But this is more
this
like
is way worse.
This is like E-bombs. This is like embarrassing.
Yeah,
bombs.
It's really Keith would not.
We had
these
a few
things.
Of those at the Giants podcast.
Keith would not want these things broadcast.
Yeah, no. This could you know
population.
This is like forever. My kids could listen to this one day. I mean, hopefully they would. That would be things would have gone pretty badly.
Akiva, I think at the Baltimore Ravens podcast, I openly said that I would trade my family's lives for John Harbaugh as my team's coach. So I'm hoping that our children never listen to this.
Yeah. And if our kids are listening, it's like they want one shred of like evidence that we ever existed. It's probably bad news.
Yeah. Josh, if your fiance was the coach of the Seattle Seahawks and she called a pass play to a receiver nobody's ever heard of, you know, in the slot on the penultimate play of the Super Bowl. Are you still going through with the wedding?
Well, I should have known that this would be the first, second, and third question that would be asked. You know, I've gone through some dark days thinking about that play. And In all honesty, I don't think it was the pass call so much as it was the specific pass that was called. I think, you know, you throwing a play in the middle leaves so much margin for error. If you throw a useless fade that is, you know, never has a 5% chance of being caught, but also like a 0% chance of being intercepted, who cares? Like, you wasted down. You still have two shots with Marshawn Lynch from the one. But yeah, you know, I don't know. I certainly have to question her judgment after a call like that.
Yeah, and I actually strongly agree with you on that. It's not like, oh, run it. They're also expecting a run. Although
yeah.
With the Pats, maybe they weren't. You're right. It's not the pass that's a bad idea. It was the specific play.
It was
call.
The specific play. It was to a receiver. You know, they don't have any receivers pretty much who have been drafted.
Except, I mean, that's an unusual situation, right? I mean, you have a team in the Super Bowl in such a like passing and receiver heavy league with no decent receivers. It was just such a bizarre game.
You know,
well, they won the Super Bowl the previous year with the same situation.
Well, they had Harvin. I mean, although he was like half there.
In the Super Bowl, he returned a kick for a touchdown. That's all he really did.
Yeah.
You know, I'll say that single play, and I don't know if I'm jumping the gun, you know, single-handedly led them to get Jimmy Graham in the offseason. Because as it stood last year, they had one guy who was capable of scoring from the 1 yard line, and he wasn't a receiver. It was Marshawn Lynch. So they didn't have a single person that they would normally feel comfortable to throw to. And maybe that was part of their whole game theory, that they would throw it to someone who, you know, they never expected it to happen. But I just think from the call to the execution was just a disaster.
The craziest thing about that whole play is how it really bails out Bill Belichick for what would have got out in history as one of the worst coaching blunders of all time. The fact that he let those 25 seconds tick off the clock. And in retroactively, idiot homers like Bill Simmons tried to say, oh no, Belichick was so genius, he intentionally didn't call a timeout because the Seahawks were expecting a timeout and it threw them off.
Right, and also a lot of people say that, you know, that they thought the Seahawks were kind of rattled and they didn't know what to do.
Completely wrong on every count, unjustifiable. Yeah. He left 25 seconds on the tick off the clock in a situation where the overwhelming likelihood is that the other team's going to score and you're going to get the ball back and try. I mean, it was coaching malpractice, and I don't know if he froze or if he just had a senile senior moment. I don't know what happened there, but it was completely unforgivable. And now nobody talks about it, and everybody talks about, you know, the Seahawks as the ones who made the terrible coaching decision right at the end.
And I can tell you, I was at a Super Bowl party with all Seahawks fans, obviously, and we were all wondering why he wasn't calling a timeout. And we were afraid because of the way they had moved the ball. We didn't want him to call a timeout, obviously. You know, and when the opposite team is rooting for exactly what happened, you know the coach is making a big mistake because with a minute left, you know, they could drive down and kick a field goal and that game's tied.
It's crazy, though, that your team won the Super Bowl the previous year. You were just in the Super Bowl last year. And not only are you not over, I mean, you know, instead of being sort of in a moment of elation, oh, man, we still have, you know, one of the best one or two teams in the league. You have this sort of sense of foreboding over you.
It's a very odd feeling. And it's one of those, like, first world problem type of things where I don't expect...
Akiva and I want to punch you right now.
Yeah, I don't expect anyone to feel sympathy for me. That like,
but you used to eat out of the garbage like the Jets and Vikings fans.
Yeah.
It's only been a couple years that you've been like this.
It's been like three... You know what? I remember, Akiva, we did a podcast previewing the Seahawks the year they got Russell Wilson. And I believe that I was saying that there was a lot of optimism and that which for a Seahawks fan is crazy to say, or at least it was back then. And I believe that's the year they ended up going to... when they lost that really crazy game in Atlanta. But, you know, clearly there was cause for optimism and they've done nothing to get any worse, certainly, other than their secondary, which you guys mentioned in your intro. But yeah, it's a really unique problem to have to basically be the favorites to go back to a third Super Bowl in a row. And all you can think about is not wanting to watch any games because they're just going to show that highlight over and over and over again.
Well, I can tell you as a fan of a team that unfortunately has, with great regularity, found a spectacular way to blow it in the, you know, at the very last moment of a playoff game in which it looks like you were going to, you know, in my case, is usually make the Super Bowl, not win it. But you always go in the next year thinking, all right, well, we were, you know, a split second away. We were the favorites. You know, a fluke happened. We're right there again. The next year is always a disaster, at least in my experience.
Yeah. I mean, I just think... at least I hope for like at least another year or two, there's just too much talent on this team for it to be a disaster. They still have Lynch, and I don't think they have a good plan of what to do when Lynch is done. But they still have Lynch. You know, that second corner spot opposite Richard Sherman, has been a revolving door for now for a couple of years, but the most important member of their secondary, the most important two members of their secondary are Earl Thomas and Pete Carroll, because Pete Carroll just, you know, he turns a lot of crap into a lot of success. I mean, people try to pick on that opposite corner and they get 5 yards here, 5 yards there, but they just can't throw deep as long as Earl Thomas is healthy, which is an if this year more than any other year. But I think in the beginning of the year, they'll miss Cam Chancellor, as you guys also mentioned. But I do think he'll come back when he realizes he doesn't really have much recourse.
Well, let me ask you, you mentioned Lynch. At this time last year, or even like towards the end of the regular season last year, people assumed that Lynch would be gone after the season. Mm-hmm. You know, first of all, he's an aging running back. And then, of course, he ended up having, you know, arguably his best season at age 28. And I think that actually that last play, it was a big part of why they brought him back. I'm not saying that they wouldn't have otherwise, but I think that the way that play went down forced them to bring him back, because if they wouldn't have after that, there would have been a huge backlash. And I almost felt like, well, now we have to bring Lynch back. And they paid him, you're paying over $10 million for running back, which in this day and age is sort of going against the grain in the NFL. But do you think that he may not have come back but for that play? Or,
well, I think had they won the Super Bowl, there was a good chance that he wouldn't. I also, it's tricky. I mean, there was a lot of conspiracy theories that Pete Carroll didn't want Lynch, or the Seahawks in general didn't want Lynch to be the MVP of that game.
And yeah, but do you buy all that bullshit? I mean,
I don't buy it at all, because I think, frankly, you're winning, and ultimately you're probably giving it to the quarterback anyway. But I don't buy it for a second. I think that like Lynch is like a different kind of dude, and he kind of does what he wants to do, and I don't think he's quite human the way like most people are. So I don't have a big problem with him coming back for another year. I don't think it's not like he's fast anyway. He's got to be one of the slowest successful running backs in the league. So I don't think like him getting older. I mean, he's taken obviously a lot of hits, but he also scares the shit out of people as he's running at them. And he avoids a lot of those kind of big collisions in that regard. I also think that more so than maybe anyone but the Vikings, their offensive identity revolves around him. And I don't think they have a good plan B for what happens without him.
Yeah, so you talk about plan B. You know, there's not much to say about Jimmy Graham, really. You know, but you look at the offense as a whole, and you have one of the top QBs in the league. You have, you know, the universally considered second best tight end in the league. And Lynch, who's, you know, what is he, second, third, fourth, somewhere around there in terms of running backs, you know, within the Peterson, Bell, Lacy, Charles camp. But then after that, like you said, they've never really had a succession plan for Lynch. And they have Fred Jackson, I think, is a short-term Band-Aid maybe, right? But he's 35. He's been the oldest running back in the league for like 5 years now. And Christian Michael didn't work out, and Robert Turbin hasn't really showed anything.
Christine Michael was a Lindsey Hunter All-Star, by the way.
That's right. Very hot, Christine Michael. And
she was better looking off the field, apparently.
And even though you know, Jimmy Graham is there, the receiving core still, to me, on paper, might be the worst in the league. I think it is, actually, like, just in terms of what they've accomplished and what to expect. So is there, at running back, at receiver, behind Graham at tight end, is there anyone there that you think like, oh no, they're going to be like, come the next guy this year, like the defense always has someone step up, or no?
So they are incredibly excited about the wide receiver they took in the draft in the third round, Tyler Lockett. He has 3 touchdowns over 60 yards in the preseason, which, you know, I know is the preseason, but one was a kick return, one was a punt return, and one was like a catch. You know, he's in the Antonio Brown mold, meaning he's like a short, really, really fast guy who's a very precise route runner. So they're really excited about him, but honestly, no, there's no one who's going to emerge. I mean, honestly, their biggest weakness was the red zone. Apart from the only people who could score with any regularity were Lynch, Wilson on like, you know, some sort of keeper, and that was it. So they needed someone who can win a jump ball, and I think that the play in the Super Bowl single-handedly led them there. But no, I mean, like, their receiving core, they're hoping that they'll be more open with someone like Graham taking some attention. But realistically, no one's going off for 1,200 yards and 8 touchdowns. It's just not going to happen with this group. And they're not really asked to do that. They don't throw enough to really need someone to do that, but it's not going to happen. I don't see it. I think Pete Carroll has a lot of swings and misses, and John Schneider, the GM, there are a lot of swing and misses on offense. Every running back they've drafted, I mean, you know, they got Fred Jackson. They got him as the backup because he's a great pass blocker. That's really the only reason. Their backup Turbin is hurt with a high ankle sprain. They don't know when he's coming back. They got him as insurance, especially, and then they felt okay trading Christine Michael. But the only person I expect to pop, I expect Graham to catch a lot of touchdowns, but not have many yards. And it might free up some of the guys. And Lockett's the big name to watch, I would say.
But not Lockett, the one who got the ball wrestled away from him in the Super
correct.
Bowl.
Correct. There are two Locketts now on this
team.
Oh,
that's confusing.
Yeah.
And let me ask you about Chris Matthews, speaking of multiple people with the same name. He's really big. He had 100 yards in the Super Bowl. Is he like a big piece of this offense going forward, or was that just sort of a fluke in that game?
He almost got cut.
So I guess not.
I'm pretty sure he didn't have a catch in the regular season last year. I think part of that was part of the Super Bowl plan was they knew he'd be ignored, is my guess, because he was very nearly cut.
The Patriots tried that with Chad Johnson, Ocho Cinco against the Giants, but he couldn't catch. Let me ask you a question. This is a stat I came up with myself just before we started the podcast. So Max Unger, who they traded, only played 6 games last year, and I was sort of interested to see the impact he had. So, and again, it's small sample size. You know, we're talking about 6 games that he played versus 10 that he didn't. But in the 6 games he played, they averaged 28 points a game versus 22 in the games he didn't. And in the 6 games he played, the Seahawks rushed for over 200 yards a game versus in the 10 games he didn't, they only rushed for 154 yards a game. Now, I say only. 154 still would have led the league. The Seahawks were first in the league at 173 overall, which is absurd. Nobody else is at 150. So, you know, even in the 10 games he missed, they still had the best rushing attack in the league. But obviously, you know, it was a third better rushing over 200 yards a game when he played. So is the interior of that offensive line going to struggle with Unger's absence and possibly the running game as well a little bit?
Oh, I mean, I think the pass protection in the first few weeks and maybe the whole year is going to be a disaster. And it pretty much was last year. You know, a little trade secret for those who didn't watch Seahawks games every week like I did. I mean, Wilson's running for his life half the time, and he just happens to be very escapable. Like, he's very short, and he's got a really good instinct for where to go, and never gets hit very hard. So he is very uniquely suited to survive that kind of offensive line. But truth be told, there's going to be big problems. I think because they have kind of the zone blocking scheme, the running game always is always going to have some success. And they do it almost willing to sacrifice some of the pass protection, I think. They get different kind of offensive linemen to fit that scheme who aren't necessarily great pass protectors. But, I mean, they're fragile. Their best offensive lineman is Russell Okung, their left tackle. And, you know, he's banged up all the time. So if he goes down, like, they're running for their lives a lot. And I think the only reason they survive is because of Wilson and his escapability. And because they're willing to have Lynch run 3 yards and then carry guys for 3 more yards on most plays.
Let me ask you one question about Wilson. First of all, I think he's a little underrated by people like Akiva in our quarterback rankings, who sort of look at traditional quarterback stats and they don't look at the value he adds, you know, running the football and, you know, keeping, you know, escaping pressure. He's very dynamic on the field. My question is off the field. He seems like such an unlikable robot. You know, and this is even before he's peddling, you know, anti-scientific crap about drinking his branded water to avoid, you know, CTE. But as a Seahawks fan, you know, Lynch is such a great character, and then obviously the defense is stocked with them. But Wilson's going to be the guy our team is built around for the next dozen years. So is he sort of a, like, how do you feel about him, I guess, as a Seahawks fan?
It's painful to root for him off the field. It's painful. Me and my friends talk about it all the time. He just seems like, even 2 years ago before he went full crazy, he just seemed like a robot who never said the wrong thing and just seemed like he was built to be like a corporate spokesman. And now he's just gone off the rails with his hoe. First of all, do you really want a quarterback who's not getting laid?
Well, I was about to say, you know,
I don't.
I think he's sending you a message, Josh. You know, if he can wait till the wedding for Ciara, I think you know, you might be engaged, but.
Well, I do have some insider information that it's bullshit.
Yeah, so do I. You know what the insider information is called? I have a penis and I've seen Ciara.
Right. Well, that too. But I have a friend who knows people inside the locker room, and he called the Percy Harvin trade before it happened, which is the only reason I give any validity, because no one was talking about it. Like, it came out of the blue. And he basically said that, like, last year, Wilson was banging different girls, like, every week. So maybe he's changed his tune a little bit since last year.
Wait, I also there is some weird – isn't Wilson divorced also?
Yeah. He had that first wife.
And that's a weird story also, I think.
No one knows the reason why. There were rumors
about
Golden
State. And now
she's,
like, dating another guy on the team, or she's friends. I don't know. There's a weird story there.
Oh, you know what? I don't know that.
Or Golden Tate, maybe? I don't know.
Well, there were rumors that
Golden Tate still sleeps with other people's wives.
That's a rumor and has not yet been verified, I would say.
Well, this podcast is all...
Not yet. Schefter's working on it.
Yeah.
No, not Schefter. Gratian's inside guy.
Chester is working on it.
Yeah. All right. So now let's turn to the roster game.
7.
What do you know about Brandon Mebane?
Pulled his hamstring last year, halfway through the year. The run defense suffered for a few games because of it. He was out the rest of the year. He's basically their biggest defensive line, like, run stopper. He's also, I think, the oldest tenured Seahawk, maybe at this point, behind.
Well, this is
the
ninth
Hunter.
Year, so if he's been on the team the whole year,
I think he's always.
Unless
been
has
the
John
Seahawks.
Ryan been on the team the whole?
So that's what I just said. It could be other
because that's
the
his 10th year, John Ryan, and it's it's not a very old team. It's sort of like a middle aged team, if that makes sense, because Tavares Jackson is the only other player who has double digits seasons, and there's Lynch and
Tavares Jackson's been in the NFL for 10 plus seasons.
He's been cashing those checks, man.
That's crazy.
Yeah,
we talk about like how backup QBs
well,
did
Chester,
a great job.
You have obviously history with Tavares Jackson, but you'd have to agree that he's in like the top half of backups, wouldn't you say?
Well, yeah. I mean, he's a pass. He could look when you look at some.
You
of
guys
the quarterback
are toast
situation.
If Wilson goes down. Let's not talk
I mean,
yourself
100%.
Into it.
Okay, yeah, but I'd rather have Tavares Jackson than like the shit shows in Cleveland or Buffalo or Houston.
Exactly.
Yeah, he's you know you don't want him in the playoffs, but yeah, he could win you a game or two.
He could not lose you some games.
Yeah, you know we're talking about long tenured Seahawks, and one of the things I think that annoys people about the Seahawks, but this is really what happens to any team. I mean, the Red Sox with their pink hats were example 1A. Of this is that you have all the bandwagon fans jump on, and now like the whole you know Northwest Pacific region of the country is obsessed with this team, even though you know 90% of them probably have no idea who Chris Warren was. So you know, talk about that as a long-suffering Seahawks fan. Have you noticed that all of a sudden everybody in the region pretends that they're a diehard fan, even though
the pink hats?
Yeah,
you mean like my mom, for instance, and all of her friends? Yeah,
do not defame Debbie Gratian.
You know, there might be another one soon.
But Chester, what's your opinion on marrying someone who has the same name as your mom?
It's risky. It's risky.
It's risky, right? It's a little weird. Okay. Keep going.
All right, well, I guess I'll call it off.
call it off. Just call her something else. You don't have to call off the whole thing. Come on.
Yeah. So it's annoying as anything else like that. I mean, like whenever you like a movie before anyone else, it's really annoying when it becomes really popular. And all like seeing all the moms in Shul like wearing jerseys outside of, you know, is like absurd. My mom, you know, at least had to watch games just by osmosis growing up because she had 4 boys. That being said, what I will say is going home during football season, there is a palpable energy to Seattle that like I don't really remember being there growing up because, you know, there were a couple of years where the Mariners were good and the city was just a fun place to be. So while each person individually is really annoying, it does kind of add a cumulatively fun effect, if that makes sense.
No, I agree with you, actually. One downside of living in New York is because there's so many teams and, you know, there's split allegiances, you don't have that feeling. Anytime I go back to Minnesota during the fall, like for Thanksgiving, for example, it's – and the Vikings obviously haven't been anywhere close to what Seattle's been the last few years, but you're still – the entire city's in purple and you see flags on cars and in the airport. And, yeah, there is something exciting about that. Especially, I guess, you know, you live in New York as well now. And so when you get to go back once in a while so that part is fun. Look, the fact they call themselves the 12s is annoying as all hell.
Yeah. I mean, totally. Like, listen, I think the Seahawks lead the league in people that you would hate if they weren't on your team. You know what I mean? Like, Hating Richard Sherman is super easy.
Yeah.
Hating Doug Baldwin is super easy.
Even Pete Carroll. Even Pete Carroll's like a 9/11 truther weirdo.
Yeah, Pete Carroll is like a crazy person. He just happens to really know how to coach defense and motivate players.
Also, the Seahawks fans, like the 2005 Super Bowl was one of the most boring Super Bowls I've ever seen. It was like an unwatchable, boring game. The Steelers won. The game was never really in doubt. And until the Seahawks finally won the Super Bowl, you know, 8 years later, you never heard the end of Seattle fans complaining about the refereeing in that game and how, you know, they were cheated and screwed. Like, there's been
Josh will still give you a half hour on that.
Sorry, there are so many teams who have had worse luck in the playoffs.
You want to do a podcast about 2005 cheating in Super Bowl, we could do a whole series.
Yeah, like
we could make this serial.
Yeah, but, you know, let's I think we took the roster game off the rails, so let's bring it back. Give us another number, 1 to 100. Yeah.
Well, how did I do on the first one? I got to say pretty well.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. As long as you know who the guy is, you're basically passing the test.
Oh. All right.
Chester got the backup long snapper on his first catch.
Yeah, and I made fun of him, and now he's the starting long snapper. Then you gave me some quarterback I never heard of. Now they cut their third stringer, and he's the new third stringer.
Oh, you got to know every quarterback on your roster. I don't give you
But at the time, he was an undrafted rookie out of Old Dominion who was just
There's only like four QBs on your team. You got to know all four.
Well, now he's one of the three on the permanent roster, so I really screwed that one also.
All right, one more number, Josh.
I'll say 3.
Who's Jordan Hill?
He is a defensive lineman as well, right?
Mm-hmm. Not a starter, right?
Not a starter. I mean, they have a guy, Jordan Hill, and they have someone with a really similar name that I always confuse.
Well, there's also Jordan Hill on the Lakers.
Yeah, that's not my confusion. I don't watch the NBA anymore.
Why?
Well, that's another
podcast. What happened to the Sonics? Oh, yeah.
But, yeah, well, we could do – yeah.
That's a more valid
he's a backup defensive lineman. He's a rotational guy, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm.
All right, so give us one more guy.
8.
Wait, but all three of your numbers were single digits. You know you have like the whole 1 to 100. You're like Pete Carroll with the playbook.
Fine.
You gotta like take advantage
all right,
of it.
Pete Carroll would have picked 9, 11, and inside job as his three numbers.
48.
What?
48.
Who's Brock Coyle?
It's a good name.
It is a good
Brock's
name.
Brock is always a good name.
Brock is a good name. Brock Chester.
Brock Wienerker doesn't have.
Wasn't that one of the names? Wasn't one of the names in the fake porno that Dirk Diggler makes?
Oh, maybe. I thought you were going to say in the Big Lebowski movie,
Brock,
like the movie in the movie.
I want to say
Brock Coyle fixes the cable.
He's a backup safety, but I'm not positive.
I think he's Bobby Wagner's backup at linebacker.
Okay, he's probably never seen the field.
Yeah, all right. It's bad things have happened if you see the field.
By the way, I'm looking at Skype and Josh is on his fiance's Skype name. So it's a conversation between Wienerker and Wienerman. And I'm just thinking, like, Josh, if your fiance was to marry Akiva and to like hyphenate her name,
Wienerman Wienerker?
Yeah, that'd be
my fiance just met Akiva just a very short time ago.
What'd you think?
That she's not going to take your name if she marries you.
Yeah, probably not.
She almost left me for you.
Yes.
If she didn't know that you had so much baggage of all the kids, you know?
That is a lot of baggage, 3 kids.
Yeah, well, a lot of baggage. At least 32 podcasts is a lot of baggage also.
But we're done. We're done.
Those are the only 2 reasons.
That was it. Otherwise.
Otherwise, match made in heaven.
He's pretty irresistible to women across the world.
No question. I'd say that's pretty much if said, like, tell me one thing about Akiva, that's like, women cannot resist him.
And you took yourself out of the game at such a young age.
I know.
That's what drives the whole gender crazy.
Yeah. All right. Okay. So we discussed 3 of the guys I never heard of on your defense. So let's talk about the rest of them. I think you have 10 of 11 starters back on defense, which is pretty good. You lost Byron Maxwell, but you've also lost quite a bit of depth. You lost, you know, Super Bowl MVP Malcolm Smith. The only big
he was gone last year, I believe, or he didn't play last year.
Yeah. The only big name you added on your defense was the rookie from Michigan, the pass rusher slash wife beater.
Wife beater or girlfriend beater. It's okay.
Girlfriend beater, Frank Clark. So, you know, talk to us a little bit about this defense because, you know, this defense has really been, you know, the best in the league for the last few years and really is sort of drives how far this team is going to go.
I think that the two most important players and have been now for a couple of years in a row, everyone would want to say Sherman, but it's really not Sherman. It's much more Michael Bennett and Earl Thomas. Michael Bennett, like, kind of single-handedly is like a line crusher. He just, like, takes up 2 defenders on every play. He can rush the edge. He can go up the middle. He's just a huge disruptor. And, you know, Frank Clark, you know, the very early returns are that he's a very similar player to Michael Bennett, that he's a monster who can't really be blocked on the edge. He can go up the middle. He's not going to maybe post double-digit sacks, but he's going to take up just a ton of space. But ultimately, like, everything is kind of revolves around Earl Thomas. They can't they don't have much of a chance to do their scheme without him, because truthfully, he can play in the middle of the field. It lets, you know, Cam Chancellor, whenever he comes back, to just kind of roam up ahead and just beat the shit out of anyone who tries to come over the middle or up the middle. And it lets Sherman stay one-on-one and like press coverage, because no one ever throws deep on them. The only guys I can remember last year, I remember, believe it or not, Kirk Cousins threw deep on them when like Sherman fell down. Yeah. And Andrew Luck did it 2 years ago. And Andrew Luck is pretty awesome. So like, there are very few people who even take deep shots against them. People just dink and dunk on them all day. And it's really because they don't have time to throw, even when they don't get a lot of sacks. And it's because they won't throw deep against Thomas, because they just can't. They just don't think they can ever.
So as a Jets fan, I'm certainly familiar with the idea of having one like super shutdown corner in Revis. And then because you have this corner that no one wants to go near, and, you know, maybe they'll test it. Yeah, every quarterback comes in and is like, oh, this guy's not so good. And they test it once and like it's almost intercepted. And like, oh, I'm never going there the rest of the game. Right. So the same thing with Sherman. The problem is it puts so much emphasis on the other side of the field with, you know, so now it's Kerry Williams and whoever the nickelback is, and they're going to get thrown out way more than the average, you know, starting cornerback will. And if, you know, you're familiar with the Victor Cruz 99-yard touchdown against Antonio Cromartie and Kyle Wilson from a few years ago. Like,
by the way, Victor Cruz was at the U.S. Open with me last night.
Oh, very nice.
He got a hearty cheer. They showed A-Rod next. Not the same reaction.
Who had better seats, you or Victor Cruz? Anyway, so, like, what, you know, do you, like, I mean, from what you know and from what the little you've seen of Kerry Williams, and who's the nickelback, Jeremy Lane?
Yeah, well, he's not coming back for a little bit. I think he tore his everything in the Super Bowl. He like broke his arm and tore something in his knee.
So who's taking his, who's in his stead right now?
They have a lot. They're trying to go with a lot of different like rookies and free, like that's their biggest trouble spot, honestly. Not that Lane was great last year, but he was certainly better than whoever they're going to put out there to start. They like this rookie Ty Smith, who they're probably going to put at nickel a lot. But until Lane comes back, they're hoping Kerry Williams can be an approximation of Byron Maxwell, who truthfully only got people paid the Seahawks tax for him because he's not that good. Like he's fine, but you look a lot better and I guess a lot worse when you're on a team that is targeting you all the time, because you get more picks, you get more pass defenses, things like that. But you know, that's going to be their biggest struggle. And with Cam Chancellor out, I think it's a bigger issue than, you know, any Seahawks fan really wants to think about.
In terms of the linebackers, like, do you see anybody, or really the rest of the defense as a whole, like, is there anyone you see like taking one more step? I mean, some of these guys are, you know, like starting to be at the outskirts of their prime. Like, is there anyone you see like really stepping up and becoming like, you know, the next Sherman or Earl Thomas?
I think the best bet is someone like KJ Wright, who, you know, he's one of their linebackers, and he's a really rangy, good player. He defends other tight ends pretty well. But honestly, they still have room. I think that Frank Clark stands to be one of the biggest like surprises of the year, and like would not be surprised to see him win Defensive Rookie of the Year. And Bobby Wagner, I think he's only been in the league 2 years, it's either 2 or 3 years, and he was an All-Pro last year, and he missed a few games. So, you know, him being in there for the whole season, hopefully, makes it, like, I think, you know, the same stat that you had with Max Unger, there's a similar stat with the defense. Like, I think he basically missed 2 or 3 games in the middle of last year when the defense kind of took a big nosedive. And then when he came back, that's when they went on their 6-game run to end the season.
All right, so now let's take a look at the schedule this upcoming year. You guys have a brutal schedule, which is, you know, not only the reward for being a first-place team, but also this year the NFC West faces probably the two toughest divisions in the AFC North and the NFC North. So I think you have 10 playoff teams on the schedule. Week one, you start on the road at St. Louis. Not a playoff team, but an improving team.
No, truthfully, that's they struggle in St. Louis every year. They've lost 2 out of the last 3, and the only one they won was against Kellen Clemens. They lost there last year, There was a lot of trickery involved to do it. Like they threw everything they could at the Seahawks, but they struggle against them at home too. There's something about the Rams that, you know, I would not be surprised at all to see them lose.
Yeah, and actually our Rams fan had a win predicted there for the Rams as well. So you start 0-1, and then it gets tougher. Then you go Sunday Night Football at Green Bay.
Well, I would say that, you know, it's obviously unlikely. The Seahawks do definitely bring it in prime time. Kind of, to me, depends if Randall Cobb is back. I mean, I think the early indications were that he'd probably be fine. But if he's out, I'd say it's anyone's game because Seahawks are pretty good at neutralizing any team's running back. So even, I mean, they've played Aaron Rodgers twice in Seattle, and they have, or three times in Seattle, and they have really kept him in check. But they're a different team in Seattle. So, you know, I'd probably have to give the edge, obviously, to Green Bay playing at home, but wouldn't be shocked to see them pull it off.
All right, but for the purposes of calling a win or a
loss,
I'll
have to say a loss. I wouldn't be shocked to see 0-2.
Okay, so you start 0-2, then you come home. It gets a little bit easier. You're facing the Bears.
Yeah, that's easy.
Yeah, then the next week, Monday Night Football at home against the Lions.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, 2-2. Then on the road again, another tough game at Cincinnati.
I think that's the kind of team that they really can control. I think they, you know, can force a few turnovers against someone like Dalton. I'd have to put that as a win.
All right, 3-2. Then you're back at home against Carolina.
Well, they haven't lost to them yet in Seattle, so I'm gonna go, and they haven't lost to them in Carolina either. So I'm gonna go. For
I think
you
had that
there.
Ugly 12-7 game in Week One a couple of years ago.
Every year they played them the last 3 years, I think, in Carolina, and every game is like 15-12 and like 15-12-9. Like they're really ugly games, but they pulled them off, and they've all been in Carolina, and they beat them in the playoffs.
So. All right, so now you're 4-2, and then a short week. You only have 3 days to go to San Francisco, and you know it's crazy. This was just such an amazing rivalry for a few years, and now this just looks and even last year actually Seattle really, you know, dominated the rivalry, and now this just looks like a terrible game. Although it's on short rest, it's on the road.
Yeah, I mean this could very easily change, but I'm going to say a win. Like they, I think everyone is kind of punting on them really quickly. I think, you know, Kaepernick had a really bad year last year, but he's still like a freak of nature. But I guess for these purposes, I'll have to say a win.
All right, so 5-2, and now going into the bye, another really tough road game. This one at Dallas.
I think that's the kind of game that they lose. With an offensive line like Dallas, they really, if they can't get pressure, then Romo can just pick them apart all day. I think they do have the ability, because of Sherman, they can really kind of shut down guys like Dez. They're one of the few teams equipped to stop big receivers, but I think that the other guys kind of run wild in that game with all the time in the world. So I'm going to say a loss.
So after the bye, you guys have a 3-game home stretch, and it starts Sunday night hosting the Cardinals.
I got to say a win. I think they lost one game in their Super Bowl year at home against the Cardinals. I think it was their only loss.
And Carson Palmer had like four interceptions in that game.
Yeah, it was just a mess of a game. But I think that that's the kind of game the Seahawks now, you know, win.
And then for the second time in exactly a month, you host the Niners.
Well, if I picked them to win on the road, I got to pick them to win at home. Like they kind of beat the shit out of them at home, even when they were good. So I'm definitely going with the win there.
And then you guys host, this is a fun matchup you don't see too often. Pittsburgh comes to town.
Ah, rematch of that Super Bowl.
Oh, I know I'm sounding super homerish here, but I think given how...
you have one of the best teams in the league. You're allowed to predict them to win games.
So like being as psyched up as they'll be to face, like everyone hates the Steelers there. Yeah, like they got to pull that game off.
So they sweep the home stretch to go to 8-3.
Yeah.
And then I think December 6th in Minnesota, I think you and Chester should fly there together.
Yeah, that'd be a good move. I don't know. I think that I want to give this to Chester. You know what I mean? I kind of feel for him.
No feelings here. What are you,
Chester? What do you predict? Did you have the Seahawks winning this game?
I think I did. Yeah, okay. I have the Vikings in a swoon like around Thanksgiving time.
I think that's the
lot of apprehension here.
Yeah, I feel like it's got to be close, you know. But I'm gonna give it to the Vikings. I just got a feeling about it.
And then Sunday night in Baltimore,
more purple. That's a purple road trip.
Yeah, I think that's got to be a loss. I mean, in Baltimore, it's like one of the, you know, one of the top places to hardest places to play, along with Seattle. So I think I got to give them the win there.
Five and five. Now, do you save the Seahawks if you're been in a big survivor pool that you need to get to, you know, week 17 to win? Do you save the Seahawks for this game, week 15 hosting Cleveland? Do you use them against the Niners? Do you, you know,
maybe against
the
Bears?
Use them against the Bears in week 3? Like, what do you do?
I feel like the Bears, so far of all the games you've described, the Bears, I think, are probably the easiest game.
Well, we'll get 2 weeks to see the Bears.
But there's no way in hell they're starting 0-3. So.
And it's the home opener. They're just going to, like, if the Seahawks go 1-1 to start the year between the Rams and Green Bay, I think they're in really good shape. Because, like, they're going to kick the shit out of the Bears. They just the Bears are bad, and they're going to be amped up at home. And, like,
wait, we're going backwards.
Someone, yeah, sorry. Go ahead.
All right, so
that Browns game is a win, right?
Browns game's a win.
And then hosting the Rams?
Hosting the Rams. I mean, all those games are close, but they've also won all the home games over the last, you know, 3 or 4 years.
Oh, so you'll be 10-5 going to this last game in Arizona. Give me the other three teams in your division's records at that point.
not just their final record, but their record in week 16, please. Go.
Yes.
Right. Arizona is going to be something like 9-6.
So wait, if they win this game, does that mean they could win the division?
Yeah, you're predicting this game to be for the division.
If you're 10-5, or I mean, maybe you already have a tiebreaker. I don't know.
Yeah, St. Louis and San Francisco will both be irrelevant at that point. So, you know, I think they'll both, you know, end up somewhere around 6-2, 7-9 at best. I think that Arizona like has potential. It you know what? Their team is so dependent on Carson Palmer staying healthy because they just have a shit sandwich after that. They really just have no one that can fill the void. And even with him, they're not great, but they're good enough to beat all the bad teams that they should. So I think there's a chance that it's for the division. I mean, I think I'm being kind of pessimistic about the Seahawks schedule, and I haven't really looked at Arizona's schedule, but I'm being somewhat optimistic about theirs. But yeah, I think it's possible that we go into that and that game is actually important, at least for seeding or something.
And are you going to win or lose?
You know, they've won the last couple of years. Even, you know, at full strength, when Arizona was at full strength, I think they got to pull it off. I think they've gotten used to playing there where they used to have trouble there. And then I think the last 2 or 3 years, they've won pretty easily down there. So I would expect that.
All right. So that puts you at 11-5 atop the division, but probably behind at least Green Bay for the one seed who beat you. And then, I don't know, possibly Dallas, who's also beaten you. I don't know if they'll be 11-5 or better, in which case they'd have the tiebreaker, or if you see Philly coming ahead in that division. But so you're expecting the Seahawks to slot in like a 2 or 3 seed, something like that?
Yeah, I think that's like the more realistic expectation. You know, a lot could change. Honestly, I think Cam coming back helps them more than his, like any stat or anything like that could possibly dictate. And, you know, I'm pretty new school when it comes to baseball, but I'm pretty old school when it comes to football, and would I think he makes a bigger impact. And I think like one or two of those losses that I kind of predicted to happen might change around with someone good.
What's the expectation for the season? Like, do you need to win the Super Bowl to say the season wasn't a failure?
I think they have to get to the championship game at least for it to be. I mean, it's hard for any real fan to say that anything less than winning the Super Bowl, especially when you have the chance. Meaning, like, I would consider when they lost to Atlanta a few years ago, like, that was a successful season because that's when they really started to gel. But now, like, given their current roster structure, they don't have a huge window. They're paying a handful of guys so much money that it's very hard to keep doing this year after year. So I do kind of suspect that if they don't make it to at least the championship game, they're like, it's not really a successful season for them.
All right. So, you know, it's interesting, Akiva, that, you know, I've sort of run my predictions versus our guests. And for every team ranked 6 through 32, our guest has a higher prediction for their team than I do, which I sort of indicates the homerism. But for these teams in the top 5, I think I'm actually higher on them than their fans. I don't know. Maybe it's when you're a fan of a team that is that good consistently. Maybe you know, sober up a little bit and you sort of have higher expectations.
We would have no idea. I don't know.
It's a little surprising to me.
I think it's like trying to temper your excitement a little bit, because part of me knows how difficult it is for a team to get back to three straight Super Bowls. And to expect that is like a little crazy, even if they probably do still have the most talented team in the league. Like, you know, I think the Patriots got significantly worse. I think that Green Bay got significantly worse by losing their second best offensive player. The Seahawks didn't get significantly worse. They got a little bit worse, but like, it's very hard to not, and they might've gotten a little bit, you know, they might've gotten a little bit worse on defense, but they might've gotten like a decent amount better on offense. So like, for me, it's kind of about setting expectations, because I do have high hopes for them. But I think anything less than the Super Bowl is kind of a bust for them at this point.
So we were about to wrap up this podcast and turn to get ready for recording our number one episode, which will be tomorrow, which will be the Green Bay Packers. But I noticed on Skype, my Seattle local man on the scene, Ari Gleischer, just signed on. Ari, are you there?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yeah, so we are talking to Josh Grashin about the Seattle Seahawks, and we're just wrapping up our episode. But tell us what it's like to be in Seattle and not a Seahawks fan.
It's been kind of nuts. Like, we got here when Russell Wilson got here. So watching this whole sort of Seahawks rush come on, it came on really fast. So it's been, I've liked it. I thought it's been a lot of fun being here while the Seahawks have been good. Like, I wish I was, like, more a part of it. Like, I'm sort of tangential to it, but it's fun that they're winning. Like, everyone's super into it, you know?
All right, Josh was looking at that Seahawks schedule. The game that he is most confident about, the easiest game on the schedule this year, is Week 3, the home opener against the Bears.
Yeah, that's fair.
Well, let's say the Bears...
Cutler's going to get killed in that game.
Well, let's say Cutler pulls off a miracle and wins. You know, do you throw on your Bears jersey and run through the streets like a crazy naked man? Or?
Well, I think I'd probably not do that if we were 1-2 after that happens. Like, what am I going to do? I mean, I don't know. I wouldn't like rub it in. I'd just be really elated that they won a game in Seattle. Like, that's, I'm not really concerned of what I'll do when that doesn't happen.
So there you have it. Josh Grashin, confident that the Seattle Seahawks will win another division and be back in the playoffs. And there's no reason to think that they won't. And that means that, Akiva, we have slogged through 31 teams. We have just one left.
Win all week for the Green Bay Packers.
Yeah, the Green Bay
Packers.
Can
I say one thing?
Go ahead.
You put the Seahawks too high. I think their secondary is in more trouble than anyone thinks.
Who's better than Seattle besides Green Bay? New England?
The Pats are definitely better.
What about Philly?
New England lost their entire secondary, though. Their entire, like, what got them to the Super Bowl.
They lost,
like,
three guys from their secondary.
Obviously, they got Brady, but they lost Darrell Revis. They lost their best player.
You're right, but the Pats...
What about Philly, Gleischer? Is Philly better?
No, come on. Get out.
Is Dallas better?
I guess the Seahawks would be three, so I don't
is
think
Dallas
you really
better?
Wait, do I?
Is
yeah.
Minnesota
oh,
better?
Dallas is better.
What? Wait, you really think so?
I don't know why everyone thinks Dallas defense is good enough to compete.
Dallas sucks. I feel like they pulled
their
a miracle last
awesome.
Year, Dallas.
Their offense is awesome. Like, their best offensive line in the league, maybe the best receiver in the league. But, like, I don't think they have the defense to stay with someone consistently in the playoffs. I don't think they, but I mean, they're good. They could certainly
is Indianapolis
get,
better
like,
than Seattle?
Far.
Sure.
No, you know what? Now that I'm thinking about it, I think the Seahawks have been so good the last 2 years that this year they're much worse than they've been, and they're still probably two or three.
Right.
Really, what it is? They're much worse than they were last year. That's what I mean. But I guess no one else is really at that level.
All right. So everyone, enjoy football tonight. It will be the Pats and the Steelers, two very hateable franchises, I think.
Yeah, totally hateable.
I'm rooting for a tie.
Rooting for an explosion.
Yeah, the two teams that have beat you guys in the Super Bowl, that's true. But, you know, but we're excited at least that football's back. And tomorrow, Akiva and I will be back. It's been 32 fans in 32 days. Tomorrow is day 32, and we will have the number one ranked Green Bay Packers. So we'll see you tomorrow. Have a good night and enjoy football.
Good night. Thanks, guys.
Thanks for joining us.